Hello, my name is Melissa Prandy, and I am the president of WLPC, the Women's Leadership Philanthropy Council, which is women making a difference in lives. We do a lot of mentorship, and we have a lot of women. If you want to know more about it, talk to us. We always welcome new members. We're a diversified group, and we love doing things back in our community. So I'd like to welcome you all tonight. You're in for a real treat. I'm so excited to hear Felicia talk about her book and have Elaine here from Book Passage, both my friends. So you're in for a great night, and we really thank you for coming. At this point, I would like to bring up Dr. Denise Lucy, and she's going to fill you in on a few more wonderful things. Let's mute our phones and get ready for a great, great evening. Dr. Denise Lucy.
Thank you so much, Melissa. I appreciate it tremendously. And just so you know, that we have Penguin Radio live and recorded. Thank you, Stuart Horn, for bringing Penguin Radio to us, and then we will have that wonderful recording for posterity. We can share. So I really want to thank you, Melissa, for being our president of Dominican's Women Leadership and Philanthropy Council. We call that WLPC. Yes, it's long. But we're an amazing group, and about half of our group are Dominican alum, the other half community members, and together we come together to advance women's leadership and philanthropic actions and behaviors. And we are really thrilled to be together tonight and for WLPC to be a sponsor. I'm a professor of business and organizational studies and the executive director of the Institute for Leadership Studies. And our program tonight is also in partnership with what we call ILS, many acronyms in academia, okay? And also our program tonight is in partnership with Book Passage. Who knows about Book Passage? Of course you know about Book Passage. I'll talk more about that in a few minutes. Thank you, Book Passage, for being our partner. Also, the Marin Women's Commission, Leslie Belengarry is the chair. Let's shout it out for our other partner, Marin Women's Commission. And we had 10 commissioners here tonight. Fantastic. Thank you so much. And we've done programs with you before. Over many years, we've done programs together. We meeting Dominican's Institute for Leadership Studies and the Women's Commission. Thank you so much for being here. The American Association of University Women, another great partnership. I want to thank Cheryl Sorokin for her support and her partnership. Thank you, AAUW, for being a partner. Yes, let's give it up for AAUW. Also, Dominican University's Center for Community Engagement and Service Learning. Julia Vanderin is the executive director. Dr. Emily Wu is a professor tonight. She brought her students with her. Let's give it up for our students in service learning. Thank you, Dr. Wu. And Louis Necht, our faculty in the library, who's also our archivist and an immense partner, I'm told by Felicia, that the service learning team and Louis and you have two students with you tonight that you brought tonight. Cool. You'll have to introduce them, that worked on this project together. I also just want to stop and say, Annette Lindemann, she's our program manager in the back, wave over there. Yay. Annette did a lot of work here tonight to get us to get ready, and really thank you, Annette, for all you've done. And we have student leaders in the room. I wonder if you could stand, please. Our Institute for Leadership Studies leaders, please. I know, there you go. They're here tonight to support us as well. So we're all here to welcome Felicia and Elaine. I'm so excited to introduce them. They are both shining leaders in our community. They have their businesses, their careers, and they brought us all together in Marin County. Felicia Gaston is an author, an historian, a community leader, and the founder and director, executive director of Performing Stars, which is a nonprofit organization. It was founded in 1990. And Performing Stars provides enrichment programs for low-income children, families, and communities, and has transformed the lives of 3,000 youth over 32 years under your founding and leadership. Let's give it up for Felicia. And so her inspiring book, which you all have, A Brand New Start, This Is Home, It documents Marin City's founding as a shipbuilding community during World War II, where workers migrated from the American South and the Midwest to create Marin County's founding black community. A Brand New Start chronicles the housing and social challenges facing Marin City from 1942 to the present day, and it tells the compelling story of the community's fierce strength and resilience. Dominican University is honored to have collaborated with Felicia for some of the research that was done for the Brand New Start. I've mentioned earlier that Lewis Connect was a key partner, and Dr. Wu and Lewis's students. And he will come to the stage after we have a dialogue together, and then he'll explain what he did in partnership with you, Felicia. So let's thank Lewis and his students for all they've done to make this a reality. Facilitating our discussion tonight is Elaine Petruccelli. She is the founder and CEO of Book Passage. And soon after she started the bookstore in her flagship store in Corte Madera, and of course now San Francisco too, she's expanded her business to be more than books. She has a community center, expanded with creative projects for classes that you teach and all kinds of wonderful opportunities. I don't know if you're aware that we are celebrating the Institute for Leadership Studies and Book Passage. We are in our 19th year, in the fall will be our 20th. Yeah, so 255 amazing authors that come to our campus because of Elaine and her team and gave us tremendous visibility with the most renowned authors and thinkers for leadership across the disciplines. So I really like to introduce them to come forward. Felicia Gaston and Elaine Petruccelli, let's come onto the stage. And Elaine will take it from here, Elaine.
Hi. Thank you all for being here tonight. I am so excited that you're here. And I know Felicia joins me in that. I've known Felicia since right when she was starting Performing Stars, and she had this little group of children who were so in love with Felicia, they would do anything she asked, and I would do anything she asked. There is nothing this woman asks me for that I wouldn't do, but I need to tell you about her. She is absolutely knows so much. She is a historian, but she knows about people, and I consider her one of my advisors, frankly, on how to get things done. And so
thank you,
Felicia, for being my friend and for what you do for the children and adults in our community. I'd love to ask you only about 5,000 questions. And we do have 5 hours, right? Not 50 minutes? Oh. This book, look at my book, it's embarrassing. This book is a true treasure for all of us. It brings to life what happened and where Marin City came from. And I wonder if you would start by talking about how Marin City happened to exist at all.
Thank you, Elaine. It's such an honor to be here this evening and also to share Marin City's Black History story. To give a brief background on how I actually, the seed was planted over probably 35 years ago. I was living in San Francisco, going to college, putting myself through college, studying to be a meteorologist at the time. And someone told me about a job in Marin City at a family service agency. When I had never heard of Marin City, all I knew was the Golden Gate Bridge. I knew about Sausalito. So I got off on the Golden Gate Transit, and when I walked across the street to the nonprofit organization, and I immediately fell in love with Marin City and its people because it reminded me of where I grew up in Marietta, Georgia. And immediately, the pioneers of Marin City, they adopted me. They felt the spirit of me being from the South, the fact that I started asking them questions. They were really in big approval of, how did you get here? I really wanted to know, because again, you're in marvelous Marin County and you see this pocket of Black people. And my first question was, how did you get here? And when they started sharing their story about migrating from the South and coming to work, to being patriotic, coming to work on the ships, I became even more fascinated. Then I started taking down a lot of their oral histories. I started collecting newspaper articles. There was one lady who gave me one box of newspaper articles, and this was, again, over 30 years ago. And she said, you're gonna do something with this one day. Now, I'm still running Performing Stars, and every time something would come in the newspaper about Marin City, I would just cut out the articles and start putting them into boxes. And eventually, I had over 30 boxes of newspaper articles. So that, and then by then, with me asking them questions, then I even became more fascinated and just kept collecting.
And your earlier book, Grandmothers Feed Us Love, is such a treasure because it is about the women who were there from the beginning, many of them. Some of them have passed, some are younger, and we had a great time with when we launched that book because some of the women were there. And it just made me so happy because I'm Jewish, and it felt like the Jewish grandmothers who sat out on the porch, because all the Jews lived together in our town. We were only 10 miles from the Ku Klux Klan, so we had to be careful. And the grandmothers would gossip all day, but boy, did they watch. And then I learned that the Marin City grandmothers were exactly the same. And I'm just so happy you brought them out for us to know about in that book. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
But even before Marin City was here, there were people. And could you tell us a little bit about what was here
so
first?
So in the 18th century, before Marin City became people working in the shipyards, Marin City was occupied by the Miwok Indians. And when they moved on due to various circumstances, then Marin City became a Portuguese dairy farms in 1894. And was all types of dairy farms. That's where the families who existed then, and the war broke out, and Bechtel Corporation came in and U.S. Maritime and said, we need this land in Marin City because we are about to build the ships in Marin Ship in Sausalito. And then that's when they started building the homes for the temporary wartime housing. So the Portuguese families moved on up to northern part of towards Santa Rosa and in those mm-hmm. areas.
Yeah, and out into the valley, I think,
yes.
too. But there's something wonderful about knowing that the true history of particularly what happened with Marin ships. And one of my favorite pages, by the way, is this one, when you first open the book, because it is what, if you were going to travel in Jim Crow South to try to come to your new home, you couldn't go to a restaurant, you couldn't stay in a hotel. But so these were lunches, things you could pack for lunch that you could eat without having to worry about stopping. And I don't know who did this page, but that's a great page.
Well, it brings back lots of memories of me growing up in Marietta, Georgia. I grew up in a time of segregation, mm-hmm. and there were places that we could not shop. There was even going to the movie theaters, having to go into the side door and not go into the front door. Going up a lot of the lot of steps, and when I reflect back on that time, we actually had the best seats in the house because we didn't have to look over people's heads. We could look straight at the movie screen. again, being from the South, and we know that during segregation, during the Jim Crow South, that there was the segregated restrooms, there was segregated water fountains, and of course, there were, when people traveled during that time, during the 40s, there was only two modes of transportation, the Greyhound bus or the Southern Pacific or Union Pacific. There were dining cars, but the dining cars were only for whites only, even though the blacks served them. And when people rode on the Greyhound bus, they were not able to purchase food when they would get off where the restaurants were, or either there were some restaurants you could have, the blacks would have to go to the back of the restaurant. So you bring your food in a shoebox, and you would bring food that was sustainable, that would last 4 or 5 days, fried chicken, jar of pickles, boiled eggs, peanuts, fruit of the season, and you would always bring enough to share with someone else because some people didn't have family members that would prepare that food for them. Sustainable.
Sustainable, exactly.
Organic.
How chic, huh? Well, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about when the people from the South got here, and they were charged with building how many ships and how many?
93 ships were built between 1942 and 45.
I mean, that's impossible. And everybody knows that's impossible.
24 hours a day. The shipyard never closed. And when I spoke with many of the original pioneers, they talked about they being patriotic. One, they had to leave. They wanted to leave to make a new, brand new start for themselves, for their families. They all bought a one-way ticket. There was no round-trip ticket. They were like, we're leaving making 25 cents an hour. We heard that people could make up to $1.20 an hour. And again, they were making a brand new start, and that's the title of the book, and that's how I was inspired to come up with that title.
It's a gorgeous title. But how were the workers treated? I mean, not all the workers were black people from the South.
Well, actually, Marin's ship was the most integrated of all the shipyards in the Bay Area. There were four shipyards. There was San Francisco, Bayview Hunters Point, Richmond, Vallejo, Mare Island, and Marin ship. But Marin City was really the most integrated. It was so much that sociologists and congressmen would come out to really look and study this. Like, is this really going to work? You're bringing people from segregated, and they're coming from whites and blacks not living together, and now they're all living together. The difference is the white families who worked in the shipyards, they knew immediately that they would be able to purchase homes. In 1943, the federal government was given home loans at 4%. So although people were working together, the white families knew that they would be able to purchase homes in Corte Madera, Sausalito, Mill Valley. Homes were going for like $16,000. Mm-hmm. The blacks were not able to purchase any homes due to redlining. But they were like, this is fine. We got a beautiful view of the ocean. We're not, even though they were living in the temporary wartime housing, the housing was only meant to last 4 years. And the housing actually stayed up for 18 years, which, again, this is the discrimination that the black families were faced with. But the saying is like, you make a way out of no way. Mm-hmm. They had a great social life. There's a women's social club. There's a rod and gun club. There's a quilting club. They did all the things that they had brought up in the South, their traditions, making sure that their families went to church, making sure that the children was educated. And again, they were really happy to still be in Marin City.
And so when the war was over and the white families were able to purchase homes and the black families stayed there, the schools were integrated, yeah. But how did they stay integrated, or
the schools were integrated in the early 40s mm-hmm. and the 50s. And even during the 60s, at that time, the schools were, they were named the Marin City School, Central School, Richardson Bay School, and now is Dr. Martin Luther King School. Mm-hmm. And it's fluctuated over the years because Marin City's population demographics has changed over the years. There were 80,000 people who worked in the shipyards. There were 20,000 black, and the reason putting this book together was telling untold stories because there are books about marinship, but you don't see a lot of the stories about the black experience. And this is why it was important to put this book together to share the stories of the blacks and not only what how they live, but the discrimination that they still had to face even during working in the shipyards. There was a big civil rights case called James versus Marin Ship. There was a gentleman who was a welder. He came from New York, and the Boilermakers wanted all the blacks to be in a separate union. And Joseph James spearheaded this civil rights case. He even sought the legal help from Thurgood Marshall, which was at the time an NAACP attorney, but they actually won. So I would consider this Marin County's first affirmative action case in 1944.
And he won, which is what a hero.
Yes.
Truly. Marin City has also had a lot of people who've gone on to do very interesting and famous things from, and I some of them I think knew you when they were quite young.
I actually didn't get a chance to meet one famous producer. His name is George Duke, because a lot of times when people think about Marin City, then they say Tupac. And Tupac did live in Marin City during that time. But we had lots of successful people who have come through Marin City. And George Duke was one. He became a big music producer, Grammy Award winner. He took piano classes at a young age. And his mother started the first Marin Art and Garden Club. Mm-hmm. And there actually is an exhibit at the Marin Civic Center right now focusing on George Duke's mother.
Speaking of exhibits, I don't know how many of you have seen the magnificent exhibit of the artifacts from Marin Ship and Marin City. I highly recommend it. And I believe it's now at the Office of Education, right?
Yes. When this book came out, it was a big push. Imagine collecting all of these newspaper articles for over 30 years. I thank the support of Dominican University that was brought up early, Dr. Emily Wu, who approached me in 2018 and said, I have a community service project, and I'm like, I got the best thing for them. So let's bring these interns in. And they started compiling all the newspaper articles, and the boxes kept going down and down and down. And they would make sure that the articles was cut and pasted. They're all into binders now. And then we've started scanning all of these articles. And it's just have grown. But the exhibit that's up now, it's our third traveling exhibit. It first came out in 2022. It was at the Bartolini Gallery and the Civic Center. And then it went into storage for a while. And it compiles over 300 items, artifacts, and images. And now, then it went to the Marin Community Foundation in 2022. And now it's at the Marin County Office of Education. And it will be there until the end of May.
And speaking of the Office of Education, one of the most exciting things, I think, is the curriculum of that's being developed and or that you did have developed. Could you tell us a little bit about how this has moved from this book to a whole school curriculum for from second grade all the way through high school?
Yes, this is one of the most exciting projects. Of course, having this book has been a labor of love. Even the fact of putting all these articles together, and the publisher that I work with, she's like, you can have 96 pages. I'm like, how can you get 80 years of history into 96 pages. And when Lewis come up and we're gonna talk about the interns, how we were able to pull all this together. So she did let me expand to 106 pages. And that helped because I say we got to go from 1942 to 2022. The most important part is that Dominican University provided their faculty in the education and history department, and they helped develop a curriculum based on the California course standards, along with the Marin County Free Library, who have developed study guides. So now all the kids in, there are 67 public schools in the Marin County Office of Education. Each library, 15 books are given to 67 of the schools' libraries. And now each of those students have the curriculum. And now this is all incorporated. So they will learn not only about the Miwok Indians and the missions, but all of these students now will be learning about Marin City's Black history. Yeah. And the Office of Education purchased 1,000 books, not only for the students, but for all the superintendents and the trustees.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's, I'm glad that the superintendent and the trustees read the book. I think that's really important. I was telling Felicia, I was sitting next to a young man about 6 months ago who is in a high school in Marin County, and I was talking about Marin City, and he said, I don't know anything about Marin City. I don't know where it came from. I don't know why people live there. And I told Felicia, this has to change. People have to know each other. And it's such an important part of our country's history too. So I thank you. I want to show you all, you all have books, but do not miss, first of all, the list of all the business, small businesses that grew up in Marin City. And I know that now it's a big mall, but what a group of entrepreneurs and people who took care of each other.
Yes. In the beginning, there was always stores and a post office, a cafeteria, because you have this small community that was growing. Remember, we're talking about 80,000 people who worked in Marin shipyards. There were markets that was owned by a German family at first. Then there was the called Waldo Market. There was the Bryce Brothers Market. Then there's the Marin City Market. And after they moved on, then we, in the 50s is when the black-owned businesses started in Marin City. And there was quite a few. There's the cab driver. There was beauty salons. There were gas stations. And they thrived for a while, and then the Marin County Redevelopment Agency came through in the 60s, and they tore all of those businesses down, which I feel that was the collapse of the potential middle class, because yes, most cities are thriving with small businesses. Marin City possibly could be like Sausalito, Mill Valley, because you have small businesses, but if you get rid of all of the businesses, then you're destroying the generational wealth.
Yeah. Some people referred to it in those days as the Marin County Destruction Office, and it's heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. I also found out something in this book that I never knew. There are all these streets with names. I never know how to find my way in Marin City if I don't, I look at the landmarks. I don't look for a street sign.
Well, there were lots of different names during the Marin ship days, but a few of those streets are still the same, not many, but they got rid of a lot of those. And what we have to remember is that developers were eyeing Marin City's land right in the, when the war was about to be over, then developers start coming in and purchasing the land. And in the early 50s, you have to remember that Marin City is prime property. It has the best views. Mm-hmm. We're close to the freeway, whether you can go to San Francisco, you can go to up north. There was at one point, the Marin Civic Center was planning on building the Civic Center in Marin City because of the proximity and because it's shaped like a bowl. And then they thwarted that idea. But Marin City blacks have been facing this ongoing battles against outside politics and developers for over 80 years. And we're still fighting that even throughout the deferred maintenance of the housing. When we talk about the wartime housing that lasted for 18 years, in this book, we have documented that there was conversations about post Marin City after the war. What are we going to do with the black people when the war is over? We don't want a ghetto in Marin. So this has been going on for all this time. Mm-hmm. And even when we look at what's happening with the Golden Gate Village public housing, mm-hmm. Marin City residents are still facing that. The beauty part now is that through the efforts of our one crusader named Royce McNamara, which she runs the not only a school, Women Helping All People, but Golden Gate Resident Council, but she was able to get Marin City's public housing on the National Register of Historic Places. So you cannot come and bulldoze down those projects, but there's always been efforts to get rid of the projects, and you get rid of the projects, then you get rid of the low-income people.
Right. And but you have started the Marin City Historical and Preservation Society. Could you tell us a little bit about what that's going to be involved in?
Actually, it was launched in 2022. When I did a lot of research, I saw that lots of cities in Marin County, Corte Madera, Sausalito, Mill Valley, everyone has a historical society, and Marin City did mm-hmm. not have one before this book existed. And now we have officially launched it. We have a website, preservemarincitylegacy.org, and it'll give you a lot more details. But it is to preserve Marin City's legacy, its history. There's a goal to have a permanent museum in Marin mm-hmm. City. We've already identified a building that's been there since 1937. It needs a lot of work. We have to get on a capital campaign. And then the Historical Society, now we're focusing on a documentary because we have all these oral histories, we have audio history, we're just gonna take it on to another level so it can actually be on PBS and KZED.
Yes, it's gonna be. That, along with the curriculum and the exhibit, which is amazing, and everything you're doing is just, it makes me want to cry. Because I don't ever tell this woman anything's impossible. She doesn't know that word. And I mean, from when I first met you, nothing was impossible. We're going to do this, and Elaine, we're going to work together to make this happen in your store. And I thought, if she says so, I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm so glad that we've had all this time working together, and I just can't wait to see what Felicia does next. Mm-hmm. We are just so lucky to be here at Dominican, and in this, I look up at the ceiling and this beautiful, built in 1930s building in really quite wonderful shape, and to have everyone gathered here. And Dr. Lucy, and who has been my mentor for 20 years pretty soon, and Melissa Prandy, people from Dominican's WLPC, and all of the boards in Marin realize how important this book is and your work is. So that makes me feel good about the future. That plus the kids knowing who in the hell we are. Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask Louis Connect to come up. I'm probably saying your name wrong, Louis, mm-hmm. and talk to us about what he did as the... Louis is the reference and mm-hmm. instruction librarian here at Dominican and at the Alemany Library, where all the students have great memories. And I just think you and Felicia together, nothing, a miracle happened.
Thank you, Elaine. Thank you, Felicia, for suggesting I come up here and talk about archiving, talk about the work that students have done of Dominican to be a part of this social change, to be a part of the community of Marin City, and that being a part of education. I want everybody to remember that word. I'm going to go back to it. Also, the no way back, one way ticket. Remember that phrase. We'll come back to that. As university archivist, I work with historical collections pertaining to this university. And as a librarian, I also work with learning frameworks, helping students connect themselves with the course material that they're working on. Now, perhaps you know this, perhaps you don't, but this university so happens to be the one four-year university in Marin County. That's not me bragging, that's me saying there's a responsibility when there is social change and there are social justice movements that need to happen and needs to happen with this university in connecting with communities where that social change needs to happen. And it's one thing to assume what you can do for that community, it's another to form partnerships, engage in cultural humility, and impart that upon students to be a part of that. So in 2021, just a year after I started working here in 2020, wild time to start a job, Emily Wu, Dr. Emily Wu, from the Center for Community Engagement, which I'm very thankful for the Center for Community Engagement, because a lot of the community archiving work I've done, the partnership work I've done, comes from relationships they've built and sustained, and I've been blessed to be a part of. Summer 2021, I was introduced to Felicia. We took a trip to the Marin Civic Center, saw the Bartolini Gallery, and I heard this vision that Felicia had. And let me tell you, Felicia continuously visions, it never stops. I know this because I've been called at 8 a.m. I live in San Francisco. I've been called at 8 a.m. talking about the work to be done, and that the ancestors are talking to Felicia. The Marin City ancestors are talking to Felicia, get back to work, talk with this city council member, plan this event, make sure you have students to be scanning articles. Also, in her own right, it's been 30 plus years of collecting historical materials, preserving historical materials, digitizing historical materials. Felicia is also an archivist for the Marin City Historical Preservation Society. And now I want to get to the part of education and the no way back, the one way ticket. In 2022, the 80th anniversary happened of Marin City as a black community. Those 80 years are in part because of the resilience of the black community in Marin City, because there is no way back. That is home, that is community. Out of all the challenges faced to this very day, if you've ever been to the National Archives building in DC, there's a statue that says the past is prologue. So when you're reading this book, if you haven't yet, understand that what you're reading in there does repeat itself if you don't learn from it. I know when most talk about history, that is a popular idiom, but as an archivist, I like to remind people that don't just think of it as a gateway to the past, but how we understand the ground we walk on, the environment we are in and enter into when we enter into communities such as Marin City. So, since there is so much work that happened with the Marin City 80 celebration, there was a play celebrating Joseph James and other huge individuals to the legacy of Marin City. The exhibit, this book being community published, it required student help, because I can't do it alone. I'm one person, an archives department of one. And also, I feel like students need to be a part of this learning experience, because I'm from Southern California, I'm from Los Angeles. I didn't take a course in Marin City Studies, but that's not about being the expert, because the experts are in the community. The community has the expertise in their own history, and their own families, and their own triumphs and struggles. So I'm gonna call up Suze, I'm gonna call up Cece. It's a short distance to walk. And another reason why these particular individuals worked with me as student interns to make this book, to make certain archiving projects possible, is because I like to think that I'm brainwashing the future archivists to be. Another part of the learning experience, there's no major here in archival studies, but if they're doing that work, maybe they could become or incorporate that into whatever they do, wherever their journey leads them. So if you could talk to everybody here about a memory. Start with Cece.
Hi everyone, my name is Cece. I studied here at Dominican. I graduated in 2022 with a degree in history, and you said there's no archivist major, but I concentrated in public history, which is like as close as we can get. So I was really excited, and I feel very fortunate to have worked with Felicia and Lewis on this project. On the whole memory thing, I guess it just has to be, at the time I was living in Novato, and so I was driving to school here and then down to Marin City three times a week or so, four times, and just getting to work with everybody at Performing Stars in the archivist room upstairs. And it was hot, and it was during the summer, and it was, yes, I got to know these people very well. And just sifting through all the newspapers and organizing the binders and going through all the archives, honestly, as like a history student, that's all I ever wanted to do. So it was absolutely incredible, and I thank you every day.
Okay, I'm on your level. Hi, I'm Suze. I also graduated from Dominican in 2022 with a master's in humanities, and my concentration was regional Black history, and I met Lewis, and he mentioned, I have a project that you might want to be a part of, and he was absolutely right. I just want to mention that community archiving is incredibly radical social justice, so I just want to place that it was epic to be anointed with that skill set, and I just want to say that is something every single person in this room can do. You can community archive for your communities and your areas. Community, that is the memory that I remember. We parked on the street, approached the Drake Apartments, and you are immediately in community. Uncles are outside throwing dice, having games, catching up on the day. The kids are getting dropped off after school programs, dance, gardening. They're rushing back to their houses. The food is getting dropped off by the food pantry. You're helping to kind of share all of that wealth with the community. And that, I think, was kind of one of the bigger bonuses. Like, yes, we are in the archive room and we are sifting through hundreds of amazing articles, and we are having weekenders trying to build this book at a kitchen table, and we're doing the 8 a.m. group texts with Emily and Jeanette, and we're making it happen. But at the same time, people are knocking on Felicia's door at Performing Stars, and they're like, hey, I need you to print this thing for me. Is Felicia here? And at a certain point, the three of us were like, nah, but we got it, and we just had to figure it out. And I just have to say that's probably one of the greater privileges, and it feels incredibly heartwarming to have been invited and to be a very, oh no, you good, you belong here, girl, kind of a way. So I just wanna say thank you so much for that.
Thanks. Thank you so much. Thanks, Lewis, and for Cece and Suze, I mean, my God. Now, I bet some people in the audience might have some questions, so we want your questions. No questions? No. Everybody knows. Oh, thank you.
Hollis, hold on.
Hollis, hold on. We've got a mic.
Thank you. I really love your exhibit, and I've seen it once, and I'd love to see it again. I just couldn't take it all in at once. It was so wonderful in so many things. I saw a hairdryer there that I recognized from my college days, I think. But I wanted to know, how can the community help with the restoration of that building that's in the middle of Marin City that could really be a permanent home for the exhibit if it really had renovation and enough help to make it actually open the door?
Yeah, the first thing that we're doing is developing more people to be aware of this historical society. So I would suggest people join the Marin City Historical Society so you can be kept informed. There's going to be many steps that have to take place because the building belongs to the Community Services District. It's under the jurisdiction, although Marin City is unincorporated, and then there's so many steps that we have to go forward. So right now we're just bringing awareness, and we definitely, you need to raise some money. The beauty part is that I've been able to meet the original family members who own that home. From the Portuguese family. And it was someone I actually did some work with. He was a retired Mill Valley firefighter. And once we started talking, he's like, my great aunt lived in that building. So that's the first start, but it's really gonna take lots of money. The building has been there since 1937. I'm not sure if we want to make it a historical point of interest, because sometimes you make something a historical point of interest and you can't do too much. I've been told that maybe we should connect with the National Park Service, the way they work with the Rosie the Riveter in Richmond. So there's lots of research that we have to do. So I would first just encourage people to sign up on the Marin City Historical Society, Preserve Marin City Legacy, so you can be kept informed about our next steps. We do plan to have what we call a three-day event in October. It's called the Culture Keepers Celebration. And with that, we are planning a Friday night fish fry in October. Then we're gonna have a heritage picnic, and we're bringing former Marin City residents back and present, and any others from the Miwa Indian community, Portuguese, and all of you all invited. It will be all of this will be a fundraiser, and it will end on a Sunday night gospel revival. But it's called the Culture Keepers, because we all are culture keepers. And I do want to make, Jeanette, if you can just stand up, just raise your hand. Jeanette is a Performing Stars alumni. She's been involved with Performing Stars since she was 5 years old. She's a videographer, professional videographer, but we've both been working and collecting all this history to get prepared for the documentary. So everything is in sequence with each other. When the documentary, the building, this is where the legacy still have to remain. And it's real important because Marin City's Black population is at 798 now. There's 3,100 people who live in Marin City. It's very, very diverse. So this is why it's very important that we get this museum and we get this documentary done.
I think it's important to all of us. Thank you so much. I see another question.
What did it take to make the book?
Wow, that's a very good question, Miles.
Sure is.
It is. As Cece and Lewis and Sue said, we were taking all of these newspaper articles. We had so many newspaper articles, but at some point we had to say, okay, how much are we going to put in this book? Remember, we had to have it for so many pages. And we actually had to identify the subject. We decided that we wanted to just focus on housing and social life, because there's so many different themes in Marin City. You could talk about education, you could talk about law enforcement, but we decided to have one specific theme of housing and social life. And of course we had to raise the money, and we were able to do that through the sponsorships for the Marin City 80. And I published books before. As a matter of fact, when I lived in San Francisco, I published the books to black-owned restaurants because I wanted to know where all the soul food was in the Bay Area. So I said, well, I'm just going to go and find them, and I'm going to eat at all the restaurants, and I'm going to publish a book. So I had an idea of how to put a book together. However, having the financial support really made it work. If you don't have that financial support, and that's the same thing we're talking about with the museum, we have to really raise a lot of money, and that's what made this book work, Miles.
So you all need it. I know you all got a book, but you need a few more copies, frankly. Is there another question?
I have a question over here.
Okay.
Felicia, my father, Charles Prandy, started in 1959. He was a rookie police officer, and that's where they started a lot of the rookie police officers. I wasn't born yet, but I heard stories my entire life. He felt community just like other people were talking about. I'm really curious. I'm hearing a lot of stories as people have come and told me about my dad, and he felt it was his community. We used to play basketball. He would take the kids and show them how to box if they wanted to fight. He'd give them boxing gloves. And so I'm really curious, because what we were told and I heard earlier, is it still the aunts and the grandmas, the aunts and the grandmas, that help the community and take care of the children like it did in 1959 when my father was there?
Yes. Those were the very people that I met when I first came here. They were the grandmothers and aunts and uncles, and there still is that tradition of the ones who are still there. Many of them have passed on, but there's 8 generations of families there. I never had a chance to meet your father, but I have a lot of newspaper articles about your dad, and he was at that time what you call a real epitome of community policing. He knew, he would go talk to the people. Even if someone was doing something that was not law-abiding, he would go up to the grandmother's house and say, you know what, he needs to just come on out that house now, or else we're going to have to come and get him. So then the grandmama would say, get out here, because we don't want the police up in our house. So your dad was very, very instrumental, and if the law enforcement followed a lot of the ways he operated in Marin City, it would be, I mean, it's getting better, but he knew how to do community policing, and probably because he just knew how to talk with people, and there's a lot of fun memories of your dad being a sheriff. And we're gonna write a book about law enforcement too.
Can you hear? Oh yeah.
Yep.
I was wondering where you called the newspaper articles from, like the Chronicle, the IJ, who was publishing during this period of time where you were collecting?
I started collecting just from the Marin IJ when I had all the 30 articles, but I also subscribed to newspaper archives. And some of the articles are from Sausalito News, Mill Valley Record. It's a monthly subscription, but this is how I was able to find some articles that the Marin IJ did not have. For instance, we uncovered an article about a Ku Klux Klan cross burning in Marin City in the 1950s. That was not in the IJ, that was in the local Mill Valley paper. So these archives, they had lots of untold stories, and this is what this book compiles. The beauty part about, again, working with Dominican University is that fact-finding. We had to make sure that everything, and thanks to Dr. Emily Wu and Lewis and Suzanne and CC, everything in this book is documented. Because you're taking other people's materials and you're republishing it. So everything is documented, where it came from, even the photos. I learned a lot about archiving. Yeah.
Well, I cannot thank you enough. Is there one more question way back there?
What are you excited about for your future? Oh my gosh, my voice is.
What is? Do we have a mic? Okay.
What are you excited about for your future?
Excited about the future?
Where should I get
to? For the future, the museum.
And the documentary.
Yeah. And I'm excited about the curriculum because I'm an old teacher, and I just am so excited that already students are coming through the Office of Education and starting to learn from that curriculum.
Yeah, I've been conducting student tours since February of this year, twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, two on Tuesdays and two on Thursdays. It's about an hour long, second grade to high school, and it's been the most rewarding experience. The students who really, they write a lot of nice thank you letters, like, thank you, I never knew about Marin City. Even when I go on speaking engagements with adults, people who say they lived in Marin City Marin County for over 70 years, and they had no clue about this rich history. They would ride by, you see the signs say Marin City, Sausalito, you see the buildings. There's a lot of stereotypes about Marin City, but once this book, you really are able to know exactly about their social life and the pride and the dignity, and even though the resilience of having to just say, I can't move out of Marin City because of the cost of living. However, people still made a way out of no way. And the part that I really like the most too is it reminds me of where I grew up, and that's having this title called This Is Home, it really means a lot.
You mean a lot to all of us, Felicia.
Okay,
thank you so much. And another thank you to all the people who've made this evening possible, made this book possible, helped make Felicia's work grow, because this is a true gift to all of us, and I'm so proud to have a little bit together with it. I also want to thank my partner in non-crime, Dr. Denise Lucy, who is my partner in the Institute for Leadership Studies, and who welcomes the authors that we find. And I wanted to tell you just briefly who's coming. Michael Ondaatje, the author of The English Patient, Pulitzer Prize winner, Booker Prize winner, lovely man. Sometimes he's in Book Passage, and I don't know where he comes from, and he's just there. Mm-hmm. And I used to sort of act like I didn't know he was there, and then one day he said to me, don't you want to talk to me? So you'll enjoy him. And his book is called The Year of Last Things, so April 17th. Amy Tan, Marin's own marvelous author of The Joy Luck Club and so many other great books. During the pandemic, she stayed home and she watched the birds in her own garden. And she has written a memoir with birding information and gorgeous, gorgeous drawings. And she's now being honored all over the world as a great birder. Who knew? I guess if you're that talented, you can do anything. And just announced this week, Jen Psaki, the former press secretary for President Biden, is coming on the 16th of May. Her book is called Say More, because she says you get to know people more when they talk to you, and you just say, could you say more? Mm-hmm. And I just can't wait for her to come. So thank you for making this event possible and all of the other work that Dominican, the Performing Stars, that the archives. You are all just, we are so lucky to live in Marin County where all of you are here. Thank you.
Thank you. We have one more, Ms. Gaston, could one more person ask a question? She's been very patient. Ask your question.
Oh, we missed you.
That was such a good wrap-up. I don't want to destroy that. Hey, Felicia, it's Kat. But Felicia, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how your work connects up with a network, a national movement on telling an inclusive history of the United States of America, places like Allensworth and Port Chicago and Portland and Montgomery and the power that you're developing in that kind of collaboration too.
So you're saying to tie it all with Marin City and how that ties in is, of course, being a national story, being people coming from the South, being during the Great Migration, which was when really lots of blacks were migrating, not only during World War II, but before then, starting in 1915, when more people were going up north to New York and Chicago. When I, part of my research is that even talking about the Negro National Baseball League and what was happening then. So there were, and the Harlem Renaissance, and of course people are coming from the South and they're migrating, and people are coming from all over the United States. But the most important part is that when the blacks were migrating here, because they were leaving that Jim Crow South, they a lot of people were fleeing for their lives, and because they learned about they're being patriotic. They're going to work in the shipyards. They were going as far as Los Angeles and even up in Portland. Portland had a very strong shipyards. And they actually, their story is something to be looked into, because there were what happened in Katrina. This is an issue that happened in Portland, Oregon, when the floods came in and people lost all of their treasures. But then we also look at Concord, Port Chicago. During the 40s, there was naval shipyards there. People were working and building the moving the ammunition. And this was also during 1940s, and lots of black sailors were killed, about 300 and so, because they were pushing this ammunition. So all of this is happening at the same time. Then you got Allensworth, which is near Fresno, which is a all black, it's actually a national park that, if you don't know about Allensworth Park, there's something that you need to look into. So I'm thinking about all of this is happening from the 1800s and then leading up to the 40s, and now nationally, this story about blacks fighting and to still say, keep their culture, to keep their dignity, you know. But we also, there's a lot of untold stories, you know, from the Buffalo Soldiers at the Presidio. It's so much rich history, not only in the Bay Area, but just through the whole migration. And I would just suggest or recommend that you all look up Port Chicago. There's a big ceremony that happens every July that recognizes all of the black Navy's people who died during that time. But also look up into Allensworth Park, and there's annual celebrations that happen, and you would definitely see an all-black town. And I'm proud that Marin City is finally getting this recognition, and the black history is being recognized through this book and also through the exhibits that are taking place.
And the godmother of it all is right here.
Thank you. Let's stand and thank Felicia and Elaine for their remarkable service. Thank you so much, Felicia, for inviting us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I wanted to make sure that we recognize one of our important partners, Marin Women at Work. And Karen Killian is the CEO and founder. And there she is. And I love this. It's a networking and direct referral group for women in business. And I love that what you say. It's the girlfriend's approach to building businesses. That's fantastic. So thank you for being here. And you're all over the Bay Area. So really thank you for helping us support tonight. So I wonder if we could also thank Professor Horn for coming out tonight. And for Professor Necht and our student leaders. And I think we have one important thing we want to do. One of our precious women members of Women Leadership Philanthropy Council, her birthday is today. She chose to be here with us rather than at her house with her family. Let's sing her happy birthday, because I love to sing. Let's do it. Are we ready? All right. Sure. Here we go. I'm talking about you, Barbara. This is Dr. Barbara Weldon, and she is a member of WLPC. Here we go. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Barbara. Happy birthday to you.
I got it, but
she said, you sound like Rosie, my dog, who sings with the app. Okay, so let's get some cookies and some tea, and if you can stay and visit, we'd love to have that. Thank you for coming. Yeah. Everybody, let's get into it. Get strong.